I'm Charlie Sonnier from the Renegades of Puck, and this is the 20th Century Hockey Chronicle. The NHL's attempts to improve scoring lead to dramatic results. In Montreal, a legend grows as Maurice Rocket Richard scores an unheard-of goal-per-game rate. On December 28, 1944, Montreal's Maurice Rocket Richard sets an NHL record with 8 points in one game. He burns Detroit for 5 goals and 3 assists in a 9-1 blowout. On January the 21st, 1945, the Bruins score 4 goals within a minute and 20 seconds in a 14-3 rout of the New York Rangers. Montreal again dominates the league, going 38-8-4, outdistancing second-place Detroit by 13 points. The Red Wings initiate Ted Lindsay, a scrappy winger who skates with Sid Howe and Mud Bruntow on the Wings' top line. The Maple Leafs finish a distant third, 28 points off the pace. Chicago, with Doug and Max Bentley serving military duty, stumble to a fifth-place finish. The members of Montreal's punchline finish 1-2-3 in NHL scoring. Montreal's Elmer Locke, the savvy center who feeds Maurice Richard, sets an NHL record for assists with 54 and leads the league in scoring with 80 points. Rocket Richard records the NHL's first 50-goal season, scoring 50 goals in 50 games. He also finishes second in the league with points 73. Montreal's Toe Blake ties for second in the NHL in goals with 29 and finishes third in points with 67. Toronto's Teeter Kennedy ties Toe Blake for second in goals with 29. Chicago's Bill Mozienko, a future hero for the Hawks, nets 28 goals. Boston's indefatigable Bill Cowley continues to produce, finishing second overall in assists with 40 and fourth in points with 65. The Leafs install a new goalie Frank McCool as Turk Broda serves his military duty. The Red Wings, who used 4 goalies in 1943-44, rely most heavily on 18-year-old Harry Apple Cheeks Lumley. Chicago and the Rangers struggle to avoid the cellar. Mike Karakis loses a league-high 29 games for the Hawks. Rangers goalie Tubby McCauley follows a 6.20 goals against performance of last year with a still disastrous 4.94 mark. This will be his last year in the league. Thanks largely to Montreal's tough defense, goalie Bill Dernan leads the league with a 2.42 goals against average. Toronto rookie Frank McCool ties Chicago's Mike Karakis for the league lead in shutouts with 4. Boston's Pat Egan leads the league in penalty minutes with 86. Joe Servith leads Detroit with 54 points, one more than Sid Howe. Toronto's Bay Pratt and Detroit's Flash Hollett top NHL defense with 41 points apiece. Hollett is tops with 20 goals. He's the first defenseman ever to score 20 goals. The Stanley Cup playoffs begin with a huge upset as Toronto shocks the Canadiens in 6 semifinal games. The Leafs win twice in Montreal before the Canadiens win a game. Toronto takes a 3-1 lead over Montreal with a dramatic overtime victory in Game 4. Gus Bodnar pots the winning goal at the 12:36 mark. Montreal erupts for 10 goals in Game 5 of the semis, but the Leafs win Game 6 and advance. In the other semifinal series, the Red Wings take 7 games to get past Boston as each team posts strong wins on the road. The Stanley Cup Finals are a rematch of the 1942 Finals when Toronto overcame a 3-0 disadvantage to stun Detroit. The Leafs win the first 3 Finals games by scores of 1-0, 2-0, and 1-0 as Frank McCool is unbelievable in net. Sweeney Schreiner, Ted Kennedy, and Gus Bodnar score the winners. In the reversal of the 1942 Finals, the Red Wings fight back and tie the series. Detroit wins Game 4 of the Finals 5-3, then takes Game 5 2-0 thanks to Harry Lumley's shutout. Game 6 of the Finals is scoreless after regulation, but the Wings break the deadlock at 14-16 of OT. Eddie Bruntow, whose older brother Mud scored the goal to end the longest game ever, nets the winner. The Leafs respond with a tense 2-1 victory in Game 7. Bay Pratt scores the winner, and Toronto captures its 4th Stanley Cup. Teeter Kennedy leads Toronto in all playoff scores in goals with 7. Detroit's Joe Karveth is the postseason scoring champ with 11 points. The Canadiens' Elmer Locke, the center of the punchline, captures the Hart Trophy. Teammate Bill Dernan again runs away with the Vezina Trophy. Frank McCool nabs the Calder Trophy, while Chicago's Bill Mozienko wins the Lady Bing. 4 members of the Maple Leafs who fought in World War II were Billy Taylor, Gay Stewart, Sil Apps, and Bud Poyle. Among the worries that these brave soldiers faced was the concern that their on-ice jobs would be gone when they returned from the war. Although many of the stars found their old roster spots waiting for them, many others had simply grown too old to compete against the younger legs that had replaced them. Over the course of his 11-year NHL career, Flash Hollett had proved he was no slouch. Traded from Boston to Detroit in 1944, he was on the verge of entering his golden years. In 44-45, Hollett sparked the Red Wings' defense. He scored a flashy 20 goals, more than any other backliner had ever scored. Maple Leaf center Ted Teeter Kennedy entered his third season of NHL play in 1944-45. Kennedy was becoming one of the team's leaders, marshaling his defensemen, keeping the linesmen honest, and ensuring that the focus remained on the opposition. As an on-ice and off-ice leader of the team, it was fitting that he would show the boys how it was done, leading the team in points with 54. Although there was a scarcity of players at every position during the war, there was a virtual goaltending famine in the mid-1940s. The Red Wings were forced to employ 17-year-old Harry Lumley between the pipes during the 43-44 campaign. However, young Apple Cheeks was not out of place in our big league uniform. In 1944-45, he earned Detroit's number one goaltending job and posted 2.21 postseason goals against average as the Wings fell one game short of the Stanley Cup. Maurice Rocket Richard was as serious a competitor as the game has ever produced. At 5'10", he was not a big man except for where it counted. In the slot and in the winner's circle. Once the Rocket got it in his mind that he would put the puck into the net, heaven help anybody who got in his way. In 1944-45, he was fixated on the numbers game. He slammed in 50 goals in 50 regular season matches, plus 6 more in his 6 playoff games. When Pat Egan moved from Detroit to Boston, he brought some lumber with him. In his first full season with the Bruins in 44-45, Egan lived up to his reputation as a tough guy, leading all bad boys with 86 minutes in the penalty box. Boxcar Egan, as he was known, was unable to derail former Red Wings in the semifinal round as Detroit prevailed in 7 games. Egan played for 4 NHL teams in 11 years, but he never sipped the Stanley Cup's champagne. Toronto captured the Stanley Cup in 1944-45 thanks to the efforts of rookie goalie Frank McCool and the scoring prowess of Ted Kennedy. The shocker came in the Stanley Cup semifinals when the Leafs, 24-22-4 on the year, upset the powerful Canadiens 38-8-4. Toronto was outscored 21-15 in the series, but still won in 6 games. World War II ended during the summer of 1945, and by the opening of NHL training camps in September, many key players had returned from the service to rejoin their teams. The Rangers had been the hardest hit club by far, as they had lost much of their first place 1942 squad to the armed forces. They finished last for 3 straight seasons, 42-43, 43-44, and 44-45, and eagerly awaited their returning stars. When we went to camp, said Coach Frank Boucher, we had 6 of the soldiers back, but it soon became apparent that most of them could not regain the skills that had made the Rangers soar. Indeed, most of the NHL's returning stars had lost their touch when they returned. The Rangers also suffered the loss of captain and all-star defenseman Art Coulter, who retired after serving in the U.S. Coast Guard. As a result, the Rangers finished last again in 1945-46 with a 13-28-9 record. Bruins goalie Frank Brimsek returned to Boston from his Coast Guard stint, but, like the returning Rangers, didn't display the same skills as before. The same could be said for the Krautliners Bobby Bauer and Woody DeMart, although their center Milt Schmidt returned to his pre-war level of excellence. Toronto goalie Turk Broda still retained his youthful skills, but he returned too late in 45-46 to help the Leafs, who finished out of the playoffs. By contrast, the Canadiens' post-war regeneration suffered least. Many of their stars, Maurice Richard, Bill Dernan, Toe Blake, etc., had not gone to war, and they entered the 45-46 campaign without missing a beat. Dernan was still the world's best goalie, Richard the most dangerous scorer, and Emile Butch Bouchard the best defenseman. Several critics, among them Boston Bruins manager Art Ross, had branded the Canadiens as strictly a wartime club, but Richard and company maintained their superiority even after the war. As historian Ricky Black noted, the Canadiens were capable of winning hockey games, war or no war. The Habs, led by the punchline, continued their explosive attack. Coach Dick Irvin employed a fire wagon style of hockey that pushed the Canadiens to first place and on a joyride throughout the playoffs. They swept Chicago in the opening round and rapidly dispatched the Bruins in the Stanley Cup Finals 4-1. Fans flocked to the arenas in 45-46 thanks to such magnetic attractions as Chicago's Max Bentley, who won the scoring title, 31 goals, 30 assists, 61 points overall, as well as the Hart Trophy. Though many of the returning stars had lost a step, soothsayers predicted a good times ahead for the NHL. After all, if the league could survive a decade of depression and 5 years of World War, then the succeeding years should be exciting and profitable. As it turned out, their predictions were right on target. Applications for NHL franchise are filed in Philadelphia, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. The Philadelphia Arena Company of the American Hockey League seeks a court injunction prohibiting operation of an NHL franchise in their market. The Hall of Fame, 16 years before its completion of its building, names 14 inductees. Among the initial Hall of Fame inductees are Hobey Baker, Chuck Gardner, George Vezina, Howie Morenz, Art Ross, Frank McGee, and Lord Stanley of Preston. In Boston, Art Ross steps down as coach and is replaced by Dick Clapper. Chicago's Max Bentley returns from the military in time for the season. Bruins goalie Frank Brimsek returned to the NHL after spending 2 years in the service. Boston's Krautline, Milt Schmidt, Bobby Bauer, and Woody DeMart returned to the NHL after 3 long years in the Royal Canadian Air Force. The Rangers reunite Neil and Matt Colville with Alex Shibicki, but the Warriors have taken their toll and the line fails. The Maple Leafs are bolstered by the return of Silaps, Gay Stewart, and Don Metz from military duty. Bay Pratt, Toronto's former Hart Trophy winner, is suspended for 9 games after admitting to placing bets on hockey games. Coach Dick Irvin guides the Montreal Canadiens to another regular season title, 28-17-5 overall. They give up the fewest goals in the league for the third straight year. The Bruins, with a rejuvenated lineup, climb from 4th place to 2nd place. Chicago's Pony Line, Max and Doug Bentley, with Bill Mozienko, help the Hawks lead the NHL in goals with 200 total. Gay Stewart leads the NHL in goals with 37, second in scoring with 52 total points. Montreal center Elmer Locke is the league leader in assists with 34 for the 2nd straight year. The Blackhawks' Matt Bentley is 2nd overall in both goals, 30, and assists, 31. He wins the points title with 61. Montreal's Toe Blake is 3rd in goals with 29. Blake ties Chicago's Clint Smith for 3rd place in points with 50. Maurice Richard finishes 5th in points, 27 goals, 21 assists for 48 points, 1 year after he has his historic 50-goal season. Montreal's Bill Dernan captures the goals against title, 2.60. Blackjack Stewart, Detroit's nasty backliner, leads the NHL in penalty minutes with 73. In Detroit, left wing Adam Brown leads the team in points with just 31. The 6th place Rangers introduce new full-time goalie, former Americans netminder Chuck Rayner, but he leads the league in losses with 21. The Rangers' only bright spot is rookie Edgar Laprade, their 2nd best scorer, 34 points. 1 year after winning the Stanley Cup, the Maple Leafs finish in 5th place out of the playoffs. With last year's playoff disaster still in their memories, the Canadiens blow out the Blackhawks in the semifinals. Montreal outscores Chicago 26-7 in the 4-game sweep. 2nd place Boston has little trouble with the Red Wings, winning their semifinal series in 5 games. Game 5 of the Bruins-Red Wings semifinals goes to overtime before Don Gallagher clinches the series for Boston. Game 1 of the finals goes to overtime before Montreal's Maurice Richard beats Frank Brimsek at 9:08 to give the Habs a 4-3 victory. Down 2-1 in Game 2 of the finals, the Canadiens tie the game on Butch Bouchard's 3rd-period goal and win on Jim Peters' overtime goal at 16:55. In a relative blowout, Montreal wins Game 3 of the finals 4-2 as the Canadiens' Kenny Mazdell scores twice. With their backs to the wall, the Bruins win Game 4 of the finals 3-2 in overtime. Former Hab Terry Reardon scores at 15:13 of overtime. Elmer Locke and Dutch Hiller combine for 2 goals and 5 points as the Canadiens trounce Boston 6-3 in Game 5. Montreal thus wins its 6th Stanley Cup. Montreal's Elmer Locke is the playoff scoring leader with 17 points. The Canadiens' Toe Blake and Maurice Richard top the playoff charts with 7 goals each. For his heroic post-war performance in the NHL, top scorer Max Bentley is presented with the Hart Trophy. Montreal's Toe Blake, hero of the playoffs, skates off with the Lady Byng Trophy. Bill Dernan wins his 3rd straight Vezina Trophy for the Habs. Rangers center Edgar Laprade captures the Calder Trophy. Many of the Leafs stars who had served overseas returned for the 45-46 season, but even the efforts of Silaps couldn't revive the failing Leafs. Toronto fell from Stanley Cup penthouse to the NHL outhouse, finishing in 5th place. Conn Smythe, still recovering from serious wounds suffered during battle, dumped many of Toronto's older legs, including Billy Taylor, Sweeney Schreiner, and Lauren Carr, after the season. Toronto manager Conn Smythe and Merv Red Dutton closed the book on Bay Pratt's lifetime suspension for being involved with gamblers. Pratt admitted in 45-46 to having dealt with gamblers, putting small bets on games he would later play in. Since, as Pratt claimed, the bets were small and always paid him to win, the Board of Governors relented, allowing Pratt to re-enter the league only a few games after his expulsion. After coaching the Bruins off and on since their inception, Art Ross stepped aside for good in 1945-46, handing the coaching reins to Dick Clapper, who continued to take semi-regular shift for the Beantowners. Clapper suited up for his 19th season in 45-46. Once one of the league's top forwards, Ditt joined Eddie Shore on the Boston Blue Line in 37-38, enabling him to contribute for another 9 seasons. By October of 1946, all NHL players who had served in World War II had returned to their teams, and for the first time since the beginning of the war, the league opened a season in a relative state of normalcy. Having won 2 Stanley Cups in the previous 3 years, Montreal Canadiens were the team to beat, and the man to stop was Maurice Rocket Richard. "He can shoot from any angle," said Boston goalie Frank Brimsek. "You can play him for a shot to the upper corner, and the Rocket wheels and fires a backhander to the near lower part of the net." Richard was the ultimate scorer. He not only owned all the offensive tools, but he also burned with an intensity that put fear in the hearts of goaltenders who could actually see the desire on his face. "When he skated in on the net," said Hall of Fame goaltender Glenn Hall, "the Rocket's eyes would shine like a pair of searchlights. It was awesome to see him coming at you." Richard scored 50 goals during the 50-game 1944-45 season and continued to be the league's most intimidating shooter through 46-47, when he scored 45 goals. To defuse the Rocket, teams employed a variety of tactics, many illegal. The Rangers' Tony Leswick and Detroit's Ted Lindsay constantly harassed Richard with insults and high sticks. Toronto's Bill Iczynski and Vic Lynn tried elbows and butt ends to distract the Rocket, but Richard was an excellent boxer and he occasionally punched out his assailants. During a game a couple of years earlier, he twice KO'd Rangers defenseman Rob Dill, a former Golden Gloves boxer, in penalty box bouts. But too often, officials failed to penalize Richard's tormentors, causing the Rocket to lash out at officials both on and off the ice. "Maurice became more and more frustrated," said Canadiens manager Frank Selke Sr. "It was only a matter of time before he would really explode." The most damaging eruption took place after Montreal had finished first with a record of 34-16-10 and disposed of Boston the opening playoff round. The Habs entered the finals against the impudent Maple Leafs, who in the first 2 games rocked the Rocket with illegal assaults. In Game 2, Richard no longer could subdue his angers and viciously retaliated against Iznicki and Lynn with high sticks, cutting both about the head. NHL president Clarence Campbell slapped Richard with a $250 fine and a 1-game suspension. The sentence, stiff for the day, traumatized the entire Canadiens team and they proceeded to lose Game 3. When Richard returned for Game 4, he was uncharacteristically subdued and the Leafs won again, giving them a 3-1 lead in games. Richard finally exploded for 2 goals and a Montreal win in the 5th game. But it was too little and too late. Toronto suffocated him in the 6th and final meeting, winning 2-1 in what was a major cup upset. The Canadiens might have won the series had Rocket's temper not gotten the best of him. Based on an informal hand gestures originated by Hall of Fame referee Bill Chadwick, the NHL adopts official signals to indicate penalties. The NHL mandates that linesmen from neutral cities be hired for every game. Red Dutton, who has served as NHL president following the death of Frank Calder in 1942, retires. The NHL installs a new president, former referee Clarence Campbell. Montreal announces the retirement of general manager Tommy Gorman, who is replaced by Frank Selke. The league announces it will dish out $1,000 to each trophy winner and each member of the All-Star team. The NHL's regular season schedule is expanded from 50 games to 60 games. The Montreal Canadiens capture their 4th straight regular season title with a 34-16-10 record. The second-place Toronto Maple Leafs lead the league in goals with 209, thanks to Ted Kennedy with 28, Howie Meeker with 27, and Silaps with 25. Chicago falls from 3rd place to 6th place, losing 37 games despite Max Bentley's second scoring title. Chicago's Max Bentley is 4th in goals with 29, 2nd in assists with 43, and 1st overall in points with 72, edging Montreal's Maurice Richard by 1 point. After an off year, Montreal's Rocket Richard is 1st in goals with 45. Boston's Bobby Bauer and Detroit's Roy Conacher tie for 2nd in the league with 30 goals each. Detroit's Billy Taylor leads the league with a career-high 46 assists. The Red Wings debut a right winger from Saskatchewan named Gordie Howe. A feud between Montreal and Toronto erupts after Leafs winger Don Metz knocks Habs center Elmer Locke to the ice. Locke suffers a fractured skull, which ends his season. The Bruins finish in third place. The Krautliners, Woody DeMart, Milt Schmidt, and Bobby Bauer combined for 81 goals and 168 points. Montreal's Bill Dernan leads the league in goals against average 2.30 for the fourth straight year. Turk Broda back in place as the Leafs' only netminder is second, goals against average 2.87 and shutouts with four. The Rangers finish out of the playoffs again, but goalie Chuck Rayner leads the league in shutouts with five. On January 8, 1947, Toronto's Howie Meeker sets an NHL rookie record with five goals in a 10-6 win over Chicago. On March 16, 1947, Detroit's Billy Taylor sets an NHL record with seven assists in a 10-4 win over Chicago. Toronto defeats Detroit 3-2 in Game 1 of their playoff series as Howie Meeker wins it with an overtime goal. The Wings roar back in Game 2, winning 9-1. The Leafs bounce back with three straight wins, outscoring the Wings 14-3 to advance to the finals. In the other playoff series, Montreal wins the first two games, the second on an OT goal by Ken Muzdell, before Boston prevails in Game 3. Montreal's awesome offense overwhelms Boston in Game 4, 5-1. John Quilty scores in double OT of Game 5 to put Montreal in the finals. The blowouts continue in the finals as Montreal stuffs Toronto 6-0 in Game 1. The Maple Leafs rebound from their Game 1 loss with a 4-0 victory in Game 2 as Turk Broda records a shutout. Maurice Richard is ejected from Game 2 for stick swinging and is suspended for one game by NHL boss Clarence Campbell. In Toronto for Game 3, the Maple Leafs claim an easy 4-2 victory to go up 2-1. Montreal's Glenn Harmon and Toronto's Harry Watson trade first period goals in Game 4. The contest remains tied until 16:36 of overtime when Silaps wins it for the Leafs. Their backs to the wall, the Habs take Game 5, 3-1 on Maurice Richard's two goals. Buddy O'Connor scores at 25 seconds of Game 6 to give the Habs the early lead. However, Toronto's Vic Lynn and Teeter Kennedy score to give the Leafs a 2-1 win. The Leafs capture their sixth Stanley Cup. Maurice Richard leads all playoff scorers with 6 goals and 11 points. Maurice Richard captures his first Hart Trophy. Amazingly, it's the only one he'll ever win. Montreal's Bill Dernan grabs his fourth straight Vezina Trophy. Boston's Bobby Bauer wins the third Lady Byng Trophy. Toronto's Howie Meeker captures the Calder Trophy, beating out runner-up Jimmy Connacher of Detroit. The World Hockey Championships resume for the first time in 8 years. Czechoslovakia, not Canada, winds up with the gold medal. Elmer Locke was plagued by injury in 46-47, slowing down what was looking like a repeat of his scoring championship season of 45-46. With a broken jawbone, Locke had to suffer the endless jokes about his locked jaw, until being taken out of play entirely by a fractured skull. In the 31 games Locke did manage to play, he scored a very respectable 30 points, giving notice that he was still a shooter to be reckoned with. In 46-47, Gordie Howe, the man who would become known as Mr. Hockey, made his debut in the NHL. One of the few awards Howe would not collect was the one he missed this year, the Calder Trophy. That's because another newcomer was shooting and scoring his way into the record books. Toronto's Howie Meeker fired 27 goals and had 18 assists for a freshman total of 45 points. For his effort, Meeker was awarded the Calder as the NHL's Rookie of the Year. In 46-47, for the fourth year running, Bill Dernan won more games than any other NHL netminder with 34 and registered the lowest goals against average with 2.30. Aside from captaining the team in 47-48, he remains the last goaltender to do so. Dernan had another idiosyncrasy. He was ambidextrous. He wore two catching gloves and no blocker. The NHL appointed a new president on September 5, 1946, when it hired Rhodes Scholar Clarence S. Campbell to oversee the league's operations. Campbell was no stranger to hockey action since he was a former NHL referee. Campbell, who played hockey at Oxford with political luminaries Lester Pearson and Roland Michener, replaced Red Dutton, who had been temporarily serving as president since the death of Frank Calder in 1943. When the Toronto Maple Leafs beat the Montreal Canadiens for the 46-47 Stanley Cup, it was regarded as a fluke victory. Leafs owner Conn Smythe was well aware of the criticism and was determined to build a stronger, deeper team. "We had two great centers in Silaps and Ted Kennedy," said Smythe. "If we could get one more, our strength down the middle would make us the best." To achieve this goal, Smythe took an enormous gamble. He traded the youthful and talented Flying Forts line of Bud Poile, Gay Stewart, and Gus Bodnar, as well as highly regarded defenseman Bob Goldham and 1942 Cup hero Ernie Dickens, to Chicago. In return, he received 1946-47 scoring scoring champion Max Bentley and minor leaguer Cy Thomas. At the time, it was considered the biggest trade in hockey history, and the deal did precisely what Smythe had hoped, turning the Maple Leafs into a perfectly balanced hockey machine. Turk Broda was the Vezina-winning goalie thanks to a talented, mean-spirited defense that protected him. Backliners Garth Bosch, Bill Barilko, Gus Mortson, and Jim Thomason, and Wally Stanowski blended together perfectly, as did three forward lines. "It was the best Toronto team I ever had," said Smythe, who had operated the Leafs since 1927. "Bentley gave us strength down the center and was the final piece of the puzzle." Max played some of his greatest hockey for the Maple Leafs, but he wasn't on the ice alone. Captain Apps was at the top of his game, and goalie Broda never made more clutch saves. As Nicky was belting everyone in sight, and Kennedy line developed into one of the most exciting units since the days of Primo Jackson and Conacher. Moreover, another youngster, Barilko, had arrived in 46-47 to give the Leafs some zip. Only 19 years old at the time, Barilko had been playing for the Hollywood Wolves of the old Pacific Coast League. Smythe phoned coach Tommy Anderson for a report on Barilko. "He's pretty green," said Anderson, "but he's a big boy and not afraid of anyone, and he learns fast." Barilko learned fast. By the 1947-48 season, he had developed snake hips body check that put the fear of God into opponents. Elmer Locke of the Canadiens said, "Barilko is the hardest hitter in the league. When he hits you, he hurts you." Toronto finished the 47-48 season in first place with a record of 32-15-13, and their success was no longer considered a fluke. The Leafs flew past Boston in the semifinals 4-1 and steamrolled the Red Wings in the finals. The Wings were no match for Smythe's greatest team, with the three lines clicking and Broda deflecting the rubber. Toronto broomed Detroit in 4-game, humiliating the Wings 7-2 in the finale. The two straight cups, the Maple Leafs were on their way to becoming a dynasty. The league introduces several measures, including awarding goals and penalty shots and assessing major penalties to eliminate stick throwing. Future Canadiens goalie Ken Dryden is born August 8, 1947, Hamilton, Ontario. Art Ross donates the Art Ross Trophy to the NHL. It will be awarded annually to the NHL's scoring leader. The first annual All-Star Game is held October 13, 1947. The Leafs, defending Cup champs, lose to the NHL team of All-Stars 4-3. In a move they will regret, the Habs trade Buddy O'Connor, a sleek center, to the Rangers. Buddy O'Connor teams with Rangers Phil Watson and Brian Hextall, and the trio notches 115 points. New York finishes in fourth place. Montreal suffers the loss of Toe Blake. He breaks his ankle in January, ending his career at the age of 35. As Toe Blake's career ends, the Habs watch the emergence of a new star, rookie defenseman Doug Harvey. With so many changes, the Habs fall out of the playoffs for the first time in 8 years. Detroit's fiery Ted Lindsay emerges as the scoring ace, notching a league-high 33 goals. The Red Wings put together a new front line, Ted Lindsay, Sid Abel, and Gordie Howe. The Motor City Trio is dubbed the production line. New York's Billy Taylor is suspended for life for betting on games. Don Gallagher, Taylor's teammate with the Bruins, is also suspended for gambling. Playing without his brother Max, Chicago's Doug Bentley leads the NHL in assists with 37. Montreal's Elmer Locke captures his second scoring title with 61 points. He thus wins the first Art Ross Trophy. Toronto catapults to first place in the standings with a record of 32-15-13 behind goalie Turk Broda's 2.38 goals against average. The Leafs boast the tightest defense in the NHL. With their production line, Ted Lindsay, Sid Abel, and Gordie Howe, the Red Wings finish second to Toronto with a record of 30-18-12. Detroit's Harry Lumley is another key to the Wings' success as he tallies 7 shutouts. Frank Brimsek has a losing record in Boston, 23-24-13, but still, the Bruins edge New York for third place. Buddy O'Connor finishes his first year in New York with 36 assists, second overall, and 60 points, also second overall. The Mercurial Rocket Richard follows his 45-goal season with 28, third best in the league. In the playoffs, Toronto defeats Boston Game 1 on Nick Metz's overtime winner, then takes Games 2 and 3. The Bruins muster a 3-2 win in Game 4 of the semis, but Toronto wins Game 5 by the same score, advances to the finals. Detroit needs 6 games to defeat the Rangers in the semifinals matchup. The Wings win the last 2 games 3-1 and 4-2 to advance. In the Stanley Cup Finals, Toronto explodes for 3 first-period goals and wins Game 1 5-3. Max Bentley scores a pair of goals, including the winner, as the Maple Leafs take Game 2 of the Finals 4-2. In Game 3, Toronto's Harry Watson scores at 19:42 of the second period, and Vic Lynn adds insurance late as Turk Broda shuts out Detroit's powerful attack 2-0. Discouraged and outclassed, the Red Wings give up 7 goals in the fourth game of the Finals and score just 2. Toronto thus completes the sweep and skates off with its second straight Stanley Cup. Toronto's Teeter Kennedy leads all playoff scorers with 14 points. Rangers center Buddy O'Connor becomes the first NHLer ever to win both the Hart Trophy and the Lady Byng Trophy in the same year. Toronto's Turk Broda captures his second Vezina Trophy. Detroit's Jim McFadden, who tallied 24 goals and 48 points, is voted the game's top rookie. Dit Clapper, Frank Nibor, Lester Patrick, Eddie Shore, Cyclone Taylor, and Frank Calder named to the Hockey Hall of Fame. Future star defenseman Bobby Orr is born March 20th, 1948, Parry Sound, Ontario. The first Olympics in 12 years are held. Canada captures the gold. The first NCAA Division I hockey tournament begins. Michigan wins the title by defeating Dartmouth 8-4 in the finals. Dartmouth forward Joe Riley is named the tourney's MVP. The National Collegiate Athletic Association staged its first championship hockey tournament in 1948, and the University of Michigan came out the victor, beating Dartmouth 8-4 in the title game. The Wolverines roster was comprised of 7 American players and 8 Canadians, including Toronto and Al Renfrew. In 1964, Renfrew would coach the Wolverines to their 7th NCAA title, a record that has never been matched. The fabled production line debuted in Detroit in 47-48, and the three-team ends quickly became a smooth-running machine. Ted Lindsay was a rambunctious competitor with a lightning-fast wrist shot. Sid Abel was the team captain with a veteran savvy, and Gordie Howe was the blossoming newcomer who could shoot from the right or left side with equal dexterity. In 1947-48, the trio combined for 63 goals and 124 points, but the best was yet to come. Having won 2 consecutive Stanley Cups, Toronto had established itself as the team to beat in 1948-49, despite the premature retirement of captain Sil Abs. Determined to win the third straight cup, Leaf boss Conn Smythe laid down a rule for his skaters: if you can't beat them in the alley, you can't beat them on the ice. As a result, some of the white-hot rivalries developed between the Leafs and other clubs, particularly the Red Wings and Canadiens. On New Year's night, 1949, Canadiens defenseman Ken Reardon took a few machete-like swings with his stick at the head of Toronto center Cal Gardner, who quickly retaliated. The bout cost each player $250 and a 1-game suspension. In an issue of Sport magazine, Reardon vowed an escalation of the war. "I'm going to see that Gardner gets a mouthful of stitches," vowed Reardon. "I may have to wait a long time, but I'll get even." NHL President Clarence Campbell issued a $1,000 bond, warning to Reardon if he attacked Gardner again, he would blow the bond. The Red Wings also nurtured a big-time hate for Toronto, having lost to the Leafs in 2 straight playoffs. Leafs right winger Bill Ezanicki and Detroit left wing Ted Lindsay carried a running feud through the season, and even Detroit goalie Harry Lumley and Toronto netminder Turk Broda engaged in a post-game bout at center ice. Meanwhile, the Red Wings-Canadiens confrontations continued to sizzle throughout the regular season. Maurice Richard was the prime object of the Wings' disaffection. Detroit's Sid Abel zeroed in on Rocket whenever possible, and young Gordie Howe hassled Richard at every turn. A powerful club, the Motor City Sextet took the regular season title 34-19-7 and collided with the Canadiens in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. In the opening playoff game, the Red Wings literally struck the first blow when defenseman Black Jack Stewart broke Montreal center Elmer Locke's jaw with a controversial body check. "Elmer doesn't carry the puck in his teeth," said Montreal coach Dick Irvin, "but that's where they've been checking him." Irvin's objections went for naught as Detroit won the series in 7 games. Detroit met Toronto in the finals and thus had its chance for revenge, but the Leafs' heavy hitters, led by Ezanicki and Bash and Bill Barilko, neutralized the Detroiters in a manner that left critics astonished. Despite finishing 18 points behind the Wings in the regular season, the Leafs took the first 2 games in Detroit and then claimed a pair of 3-1 victories in the Gardens. Intense motivation was a mighty factor as the Leafs simply outworked Jack Adams' club. With the second sweep, Toronto became the first NHL team to win 3 straight Stanley Cups. However, the Red Wings and Canadiens weren't about to tip their hats to the dynastic Maple Leafs. The bitter rivalries would pick up again in the fall of 49. I'm Charlie Sonnier from the Renegades of Puck, and this has been the 20th Century Hockey Chronicle. If you'd like to support more projects like this, please follow the Renegades of Puck on all social media platforms and also visit renegadesofpuck.com.